It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. And today on the program, we're talking about the violent death of Ohio State football player Costa Kara-George. It was a week ago today that Costa Kara-George went missing. The senior defensive tackle from Columbus had last been seen at his apartment in Columbus when his teammates said he left to go for a walk. Mr. Kara-George was found dead Sunday, apparently from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, shortly after sending a text message about his concussions. Coming up, we'll talk with Dr. Aaron Reynolds with the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program about the link between suicide and concussions. But first, I'm joined by phone by Ohio Public Radio reporter Andy Chow. Andy Chow, thanks for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
For people who may not be up to speed on this, what can you tell us about the events that led up to this tragic discovery on Sunday?
Well, as you said, he disappeared early last Wednesday morning, and his disappearance sparked a pretty large search involving community members, teammates, students, looking all around the campus area and the Columbus area. His picture with a description of what he looks like was displayed on the Jumbotron as the Buckeyes played Michigan this past Saturday. And it was also talked about during the national broadcast a couple of times. And 4 days after he disappeared, somebody finally found his body in a dumpster pretty close to where he lived. So,
what have police been telling the media about the details surrounding Costa Kara-George's disappearance and the discovery of his body on Sunday?
As far as the police go, they've been talking about how he was found. He was found by a woman and her grandson who were going through dumpsters looking for items, maybe scrap or anything that they can find. And the young boy was actually the one who found Costa inside the dumpster. They say that he was also found with a handgun inside the dumpster, and so they say that it appears he died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So they believe that he took his own life. An investigation is still going. They're still waiting for different things from researchers before they officially call it a suicide. So it's still an open case.
And most of the details surrounding this case have come from Costa Kara-George's friends and family. What have they been saying?
Most of the information we have about what possibly could have led to this disappearance and what possibly could have led to the death has come from his family members. His mother has said that she received a text message shortly before he went missing saying that he was sorry that he's embarrassment and that concussions had messed with his head. His sister has also been quoted in several news publications saying that he suffered concussions as recently as this past September, and he had about four or five in his lifetime. And they're the ones who have been bringing up the idea that maybe concussions have been involved in this disappearance and then ultimately his death.
But at this point, no one from the medical community or from Ohio State University associated with either the team or the university have said definitively that there was a relation between this incident, this tragic ending of his life and the concussions that he is said to have encountered.
Right. No doctors, no medical experts have confirmed that Costa experienced any concussions. The team doctors do not talk about their treatment of players, their medical treatment of players. So, right, that kind of information has, if it is out there, it hasn't been released to the press yet.
And we should mention, too, that Costa Kara-George was not only an Ohio State University football player, a senior defensive tackle, he was also on the wrestling team as well. So he was playing two very physical sports, two contact sports, if you will. Has Ohio State University made an official statement of any kind at this point just regarding the death?
They extend their condolences to the family. They've talked about how this is a tragedy for the Ohio State community and for the team and for students on campus, but they haven't talked about what kind of role his involvement in athletics may have played into his death. Head coach Urban Meyer again says it's a tragic situation. He talked about how the team is really coming together as a close-knit family to pull each other through this tough time, but he really hasn't said anything much about specifically Costa or the circumstances surrounding his death.
And what have Costa, Kara George's teammates, been saying?
They're very devastated by the about this. So as you said, Costa was a heavyweight wrestler for 3 years before he walked onto the team in August. He joined the team. He wasn't a starter. He didn't play on Saturdays, but everybody just commends the kind of personality he had. They said that he was very funny, very energetic. He helped boost morale, and they seem very devastated and very shocked by what seems to be what police have said appears to be a suicide. They say that he never talked about having problems. He never seemed to be having any problems, and he always seemed that he was just a fun, positive guy.
The Buckeyes football team is playing in the Big Ten championship game this weekend. Has there been talk of a tribute of some kind?
Nobody's mentioned a tribute at this point, but it's definitely a tough situation. It seems to be a tough situation for the players. On Monday, it's tradition that they come out on Monday, they bring out some of the players, and they talk about the next big game. They break down the previous game, and then they talk about the next big game. So, of course, this week was going to be a big week because they are playing in the Big Ten Championship. They're playing against Wisconsin. It's an opportunity for them to maybe make it into the first college football playoffs. But with all that surrounding the team, this tragedy is weighing heavy on them. And so you can definitely tell that it's impacting them in an emotional way.
And there was I believe it was an impromptu tribute from members of the student body that was made in the last few days?
Right. Ever since Costa's disappearance, it really was shocking the community, shocking the campus. And like I said, there were a lot of people involved in searching for him. So when his body was discovered, it was already something that was weighing heavy on people's minds. So just a couple of hours after it was announced that he was found, hundreds of students had gathered on campus to remember him, to pay tribute to him, and to mourn his death.
And has there been any discussion at this point, especially with Costa Kara George's family members, his sister and his mother in particular, talking about what was happening in the days leading up to the discovery of Costa Kara George's body and the messages that he was texting? Has there been any discussion about setting his brain aside for further study, much in the way that Junior Seau, who tragically ended his life under similar circumstances, the former NFL football player, said in a note that he wanted his brain to be set aside. He wanted to have it be studied so that there could be maybe answers for future generations about the link between concussions and depression, and in his case, a suicide.
Well, at least publicly, the family hasn't made any comments in that regard, but the county coroner performed a preliminary autopsy on Costa, and then after she performed that autopsy, they took his brain and they sent his brain to a neuropathologist at OSU. And so now that neuropathologist is studying Costa's brain to find out if he did suffer from any sort of traumatic brain injury. And I asked if that was a regular thing or if that's an uncommon circumstance, and she said because of the questions and the concerns that were raised about concussions, that's why they sent his brain to the neuropathologist.
And is there any indication, Andy, when there might be some sort of information released about any particular discoveries that they make?
There hasn't been any official timeline released. What I have been hearing is that they expect this to take weeks, maybe a month or two, before we get the results.
Ohio Public Radio reporter Andy Chow joining us to talk about the latest details in the case of the death of Ohio State football player Costa Kara George. Andy Chow, thanks so much for being with us.
All right, thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll talk with Dr. Aaron Reynolds with the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program about dealing with patients so affected by their concussions they have suicidal thoughts. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm joined now in Studio A by Dr. Aaron Reynolds with the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program. Dr. Reynolds, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we'd like to hear from you. You can join the conversation with a comment or question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Have you or someone you know suffered from the effects of a concussion? Were you depressed? Did you have suicidal thoughts? Share your story and concerns with us, and by all means, bring your questions to us at 412-246-2002. Dr. Reynolds, what have you heard? You were sitting here during the previous segment and hearing from reporter Andy Chow from Ohio, who had the latest details in this case. When you heard about the disappearance and the death of Costa Kara George, what thoughts went through your mind?
Well, obviously, this is a tragic situation, and I can't speak about the details of the case. Obviously, I never saw this individual as a patient. My thoughts go out to his family and the entire Ohio State community. But, you know, I think this raises some important questions and concerns around concussions and the way that we are managing concussions. I think that it raises some questions about proactive treatment in terms of college athletes and high school athletes and kind of being aware of some of the more delicate situations that may arise out of concussion.
Now, this young man, Costa Kara George, came to the Ohio State team this year. And previously, according to his family, he had had multiple concussions. What sorts of protocols are in place or should be in place to make sure that a football program knows that a player who's coming in has already had some concussion issues? Should it go beyond simply asking on a questionnaire, have you ever had a concussion before?
Well, certainly asking the question is important, but, you know, an important part of any athletic program is having baseline testing and baseline assessments for your athletes. So asking the questions, getting a solid medical and psychological history is important, but also doing baseline neurocognitive testing. At the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program, we developed the impact test, which is very widely used. The impact test is administered to children as young as five. We recommend yearly testing up until high school and then every other year for athletes beyond high school. But having that data allows us to track if there have been any changes. If an athlete has maybe had a concussion and is not reporting it, it can give us data concerning where they stand.
What about when an athlete suffers a concussion? Again, according to Costa Kara George's family, he had had concussions before he joined the Ohio State football program. He had another concussion this year. So what then should be done in terms of monitoring a player who's known to have a concussion for signs of troubles, of mental illness, of suicide, of depression, and potentially suicidal thoughts?
Well, managing a concussion is certainly very a complex process.
Sure.
You know, we can't see a concussion, so on the surface, an individual may look fine, and they, if you ask them if they're fine, they may say they're fine. We can't see it like a broken leg, let's say. So, you know, having a very good, solid history on the individual would be the first step. And then keeping an eye on them, you know, it's very important when someone has suffered a concussion that they are evaluated by someone who specializes in the treatment of concussion. It's, as I said, it's a complex process. You know, we look at them from a neurocognitive perspective. We monitor mood symptoms. We want to track sleeping patterns just to kind of get an idea of any changes that are occurring. Any major changes in terms of mood or personality, we would want to have a good, solid record of. So just continual care by someone who really understands the injury and really understands the treatment process.
What happens at a major university, a Division I school that has a big football program? They've got 80 players that they may not all be active, but they're associated with that program or one in one way or another. They are working out, if not practicing, if not being involved in contact drills. So Is it – it's got to be a big chore to monitor all those people, but does that have to be done, and is it being done?
Well, so there's two questions. Yes, I think it absolutely does have to be done. It should be being done. Certainly it depends on the school, but, you know, NCAA protocols certainly mandate baseline testing and following these athletes. If you can get the baseline test at the beginning of the year – And you really don't have to continually test them throughout the remainder of the year, but really just kind of listening to them about their symptoms. You know, sometimes athletes won't report symptoms to the athletic trainer or to the coach, but just educating the team on communication. If an athlete tells a friend that they're having some symptoms, that the entire team should be encouraged to then tell someone that could help them.
One of the things that certainly struck me in the previous conversation we had with Andy Chow from Ohio was the reports that his teammates saying that he showed absolutely no signs of depression. He was a happy-go-lucky guy. He was a guy who liked to joke around, apparently had a good sense of humor. So nobody saw this coming. So if there aren't the obvious signs that might be on the surface, what do you as a medical professional and what should other medical professionals be looking for in someone who has been diagnosed with a concussion or may be exhibiting signs of some sort of trauma that may raise red flags for you?
You know, depression can kind of manifest in many different ways. And many times people are very talented at masking symptoms of depression, whether they are aware of them or they aren't even aware that they're happening. So as a medical professional, certainly taking into account loved ones, friends, and family reports of any changes, giving specific depression screening tools if there's any suspicion that something may be going on, really just kind of sitting the athlete down and getting a clear picture of any changes that may have occurred would be the best protocol.
We are talking with Dr. Aaron Reynolds with the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program about concussion protocol and a lot of the questions that have surfaced in the wake of the death of Ohio State football player Costa Cara George. If you have a comment or question, would like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002, the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. Our email address, ESSPGH@WESA.FM. On Twitter, at ESSPGH, #EPLive. Again, the number, 412-246-2002. Dr. Reynolds, do colleges and universities need to be more proactive from what you've seen in monitoring concussions?
I think they definitely should be. While most colleges and universities have at least a basic baseline testing program, there may not be medical staff who are specially trained in treating concussions. It is such a complex injury in terms of identifying the symptoms, identifying the proper course of treatment, and then providing the proper rehabilitation, that I think more colleges and universities need to look into having someone on staff that is really well-versed in this injury.
And the NCAA has found that there is an underreporting of concussions and that it's likely to be higher in football than in other contact sports, since football offers more in-game downtime during which the immediate symptoms of concussions can subside. So is there sort of a tricky aspect to this?
There definitely is a tricky aspect to this. So we've done some research at UPMC, and we know that the number one symptom that predicts a more prolonged recovery or predicts an injury has maybe occurred without a loss of consciousness would be dizziness. So if there's any element of dizziness on field, this raises some red flags for us. Now, if a football player gets hit and feels dizzy on field and he comes out for 5 minutes and the dizziness goes away, that does not necessarily mean that he's fine. But he may, in the moment, feel fine and then go back into play, in which case he would be more vulnerable to a new injury.
A lot of times people assume, and I'm sure there are all sorts of misconceptions that we have about exactly what a concussion is and how it manifests itself. A lot of people assume, well, if you have a concussion, it means you got knocked out. But you don't have to be knocked out necessarily.
No, you don't.
Or lose consciousness.
Right. In fact, only less than 10% of anyone who has a concussion loses consciousness. It can be a much more subtle injury. So concussion is a metabolic injury. There is a change in the brain cell chemistry. And so the important thing to know is that every individual concussion is different. Every individual person will experience a concussion differently. There are a myriad of symptoms that you may or may not experience, and you may or may not experience them all at once. So you really can't use a cookbook to kind of diagnose or treat this injury. There's an art to it. And you have to be really aware of kind of the subtleties of the injury.
412-246-2002 if you want to join our conversation with Dr. Aaron Reynolds with the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program. Let's go to the phones. We have Chris in Butler with a question. Chris, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks. I was just wondering if the doctor uses hyperbaric oxygen treatment at all the treatment of concussions for sports, for concussions, for sports players. Because I've heard recently that Joe Namath has used that treatment, and he's trying to get a study going in, I think, in Florida or somewhere in the South.
Chris, thank you for your question. No, I don't personally typically prescribe hyperbaric oxygen therapy. However, it is available. And in fact, some of the clinicians in Pittsburgh do use this method. While there are many benefits to hyperbaric oxygen therapy, there is just not solid research in terms of the treatments that we use. We use all evidence-based treatments. So I think as the research continues to grow, this may become a more viable option, but it certainly is an option.
So there are a lot of moving pieces here because the research is and the knowledge that we have about concussion treatment and protocols is evolving.
Exactly. Most of what we've learned about concussions, we've learned in the last decade. And so down at the sports medicine complex, I think I mentioned we see 17,000 patient visits a year. Our clinic is very busy and it is constantly evolving. So our theories and the way that we're thinking about concussion and treating concussion really can change from year to year. And I think we're getting better from year to year. But it's a constant evolution, and we're constantly just trying to put out new and innovative research to help us understand the injury.
One of the things that we're hearing about, and apparently it's something that's being developed in Great Britain, is a breathalyzer test, something that would indicate you have a concussion by simply breathing into an apparatus of some kind. Can you explain what's happening there?
I cannot. I do not know about that, but I can tell you they're doing a lot of studies now looking at biomarkers. So it's certainly plausible that they would be identifying something in the oxygen.
Apparently what they're looking for is brain fluid showing up, traces of that. Does that seem feasible?
No, but it might be. I would have to read more about that.
Okay. Let's go to Ellen in Pittsburgh. Ellen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I'm very curious to know specifically how concussion impacts sleep and whether monitoring an individual's sleep might be one way of understanding whether there have been important changes, even though other behavioral changes aren't obvious.
So, Ellen, that's an excellent question. I constantly have conversations with my patients about sleep. So after you have had a concussion, you can have a number of difficulties related to sleep, including difficulty falling asleep, difficulty staying asleep, sleeping too much. Many times there is a fatigue factor, and so people will start taking naps. And once you start taking naps, you may throw off your internal sleep cycles and you're unable to sleep at night. So we always say that sleep is the foundation of recovery from concussion. If you aren't sleeping well, it's going to be very hard for your brain to heal. However, the concussion may be disrupting your sleep. So monitoring one's sleep is certainly important. We also know outside of concussion that if you're not sleeping, you may have psychological effects to that. So not sleeping has been linked to depression and anxiety. So this all goes hand in hand. And watching someone sleep and kind of encouraging a more healthy sleep pattern is definitely a good idea.
And I'm just thinking that changes in sleep are also a very important indicator of the presence of depression. So this might be another way of understanding whether important changes have taken place, even though the individual isn't acknowledging specific symptoms of depression.
You're exactly right. And the tricky part here comes when you're trying to figure out, you know, if someone has disrupted sleep, is that because of the concussion or is that because they're actually depressed? And so we know that any predisposition you have before you have a head injury, whether it's a predisposition to depression or anxiety, or if you have some subclinical learning disabilities or something like that, after you've had a head injury, all of that can become enhanced and somewhat exacerbated. So if you had a proclivity for depression or disrupted sleep and then you have a head injury, and all of a sudden your disrupted sleep is enhanced, it becomes very tricky trying to figure out what is the cause here.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like it doesn't really matter because it's something you want to attend to in either case.
Exactly.
Ellen, thank you for that phone call. In late July, Dr. Reynolds, the NCAA set aside $70 million for a medical monitoring fund after determining football players are three times more likely to develop chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, which can leave its victims depressed, disoriented, and suicidal. Talk about the kind of research that you've done and what you know about the links here with regard to CTE.
So I have not done any – I have not personally done any research on CTE. CTE is certainly a hot-button issue right now. It's all over the media. And, you know, one of the biggest concerns about all this talk about CTE is that we really don't have the solid research behind it. So certainly they have identified neuropathology, but there are many questions regarding what is causing it, what is making it worse, and the link between the pathology and behavior. I think that the key here is that we need a significant amount of research done in this area in order to answer any questions. So far, all of the, you know, all of the research that has come out has looked at a body of people who have had many other lifestyle factors that could also contribute to their behaviors. So it's just a little bit too early to really make any causal statements with CTE.
What has sparked this whole conversation is the suicide, the apparent suicide of a football player who talked about the problems he was having with his concussions. What do the patients that you deal with, you know, what experiences have you had with people who have suffered multiple concussions and who are experiencing depression and maybe suicidal thoughts?
So, you know, it doesn't have to take it doesn't have to be a case where you're having multiple concussions. It can be a very simple case where you've had one concussion. And, you know, concussions can cause some emotional changes. That's certainly – we know that. The real danger comes in when this injury is not managed from a behavioral perspective. And so if someone is experiencing dizziness or fogginess in busy environments, they may start to avoid going outside. They may start to avoid public places or social interactions. They may start to feel a feeling of being detached. It may be difficult to go to school or work. They're unable to play on the sports teams where they feel a sense of community and a feeling of self-worth. And so all of these factors can contribute to this kind of downward spiral. You know, we have this old school thinking that we used to stick patients in a dark room and kind of have them wait it out, and time will tell if their symptoms are going to go away. And we now know that that just perpetuates this danger zone into depression. If someone kind of spends enough time in that dark place without the social support, it can very easily lead to an instance where they're having suicidal thoughts. And we certainly see that in our clinic. We see that with high school athletes and older injuries. And the best thing we can do is to kind of pull them out of that dark place and get them re-exposed to the real world. And that can really save them.
So what do you do when you talk about re-exposing them to the real world, getting them out of the dark room and getting away from that kind of old school treatment of a depression? What are the things that you do to bring them out into the light of society?
Well, it can be challenging because once you spend enough time in that dark room, it's hard to kind of be comfortable being out in the world. So the first thing I would say is we want to make sure that they're safe. We would treat them as we would treat a patient who hadn't had a concussion but was experiencing suicidal thoughts. We may supplement our treatment with medication, get them into psychotherapy. But it's a slow progression. We want them to go out of the house. We want them to take walks every day. Getting their sleep regulated is very important. And making sure that we're actually treating their symptoms. So if someone is having dizziness and fogginess and nausea, we can treat that. We can treat the system in the brain that is causing these symptoms. If someone's having chronic headaches, we can treat that. And so if we can help them to feel better, we can kind of pull them back into the light.
The idea for engaging in this conversation today on our program came from the news of the death of Costa Cara George. What do you hope? And obviously there's a lot that needs to be studied here, and his brain is being studied, and we may know in a month a lot more than we know today. What are you hoping that this tragedy will lead to in terms of discoveries that may help us better treat people who have suffered from concussions in the future?
Well, I think that it's important that we recognize the complexity of the injury, and that we start to kind of move into a place where we are acknowledging that this is a real injury and that there are a number of consequences that may come out of it, but it's treatable. I think that's the biggest thing right now is people are very scared of concussions. You know, people are afraid to let their children play football because they may get a concussion. We can treat the injury, but we have to we have to educate the students and the parents and the coaches to accurately identify the injury and to not be afraid to say if they're having symptoms. But I think the most important thing is to just raise awareness about this. If you're having any symptoms or if you're feeling, even if you're unsure and you're feeling any thoughts that may be depressive in nature or suicidal, just opening up the conversation and talking about it.
Dr. Erin Reynolds has been our guest. She's with the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program talking about the link between suicide and concussions in the wake of the tragic death of Ohio State football player Costa Cara George. Dr. Reynolds, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And if I can just very briefly
Sure.
share with the audience, we've just launched a new website that has a ton of information. It's very helpful for parents and athletes. It's www.rethinkconcussions.com.
Rethinkconcussions.com. We'll put a link to that on our website at WESA.FM. Thanks again, Dr. Reynolds.
Thank you.
Coming up, talking about New Voices Pittsburgh, Women of Color for Reproductive Justice, celebrating 10 years as a human rights organization. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.